So now we hear Laurent Keller
from the University of Lausanne. So Laurent is one of the scientists I admire the most. So he has a lot of very insightful ideas and all the time, and the kind of ideas that change the way we see living organism and evolution. So I'm very happy he will talk today about the success of supergenes in social species.
So it's great to be here. My last meeting here at the Collège de France was last year, so it was a bit is how we used to do it. And so now it's great to change to something which is a bit more social, I hope, with more interaction. And so in the Phyrenes Synopsis Invicta, you have two very divergent social forms. In a form, you have a single queen, and they are relatively large queens, which depart on a mating flight. They mate with one male, and after they start a new colony on their own. And there is very strong aggression among colonies. And you have another social form in which you have multiple queens, up to 100 queens, which tend to be smaller. And after mating flight, instead of starting a new colony on their own, they return to an established colony where they start reproducing. And formation of new colonies occur by budding, that is, the queen leaves a nest with worker on foot to start a new colony nearby. And there is no aggression between colonies. So Ken Ross had been studying those ants for quite a long time, and we found that there was a genetic basis for this difference. Actually, what we found, there was one marker which differentiated two social forms. And so it was the marker we were using was first an allozyme, and then the gene has been sequenced. It's an on-order binding protein. So in one form, everybody is homozygote for the big B allele of this gene. And so colonies produce the large queens, which depart a new colony and then start a new colony on their own. And when you have only big B individuals in the colonies, they will never accept more than a single queen. So they always have their mother queens and remain monogynous. In the other social form, you can have the three genotypes. You have the big B queens, which are larger than the two other type of queens. And those ones are the smaller one, the homozygote for the big B allele. And those phenotypic differences affect what queens can do. The big B queens produced in polychaene colonies are similar to those produced in monochaene colonies. We think they can depart on a mating flight, start a new colony on their own, like the monochaene queens. But what we know is that they will never be able to go back to a colony because workers which do not carry one copy of the big B allele will start to attack those queens. And they will kill all of them. It's a type of selfish gene. Linked to a small B genotype, which induces workers to recognize and kill all the queens which do not carry one copy of that allele. The heterozygote queens, which are of intermediate size, they don't have enough fat reserves to start a new colony of their own. They can produce a few workers, but usually not enough to be successful to start a new colony. But they will be readily accepted in a polychaene colony after mating flight. And those ones, the small queens, they have only one option in life, which is to die soon after they close from the pupae. And in colonies, when you have heterozygote workers, so workers homozygote for a small B allele, they also die soon after they close from the pupae, so you find very few of them in the colonies. So you have mostly two genotypes of workers, those ones are extremely rare. And in these colonies, when you have heterozygote workers, they will accept several queens, but only heterozygote queens. And this transition occurs when you have about 5 to 10% heterozygote workers. We did some change in colony composition, and this is the ratio where you have to shift from one type of social organization to the other one. And so what's quite interesting is even a minority of those heterozygote workers are sufficient to get a phenotype which is like a polyjoint colony. So when we did that work, we were using first allozymes, then Ken and Michael Krieger cloned the gene, which was found to be an odorant binding factor. So it showed that this gene is completely associated with the behavior of the worker. It underlies the presence of two types of social forms. And that was interesting because that was the first genetic element which was shown to be a link to variation in social organization in an organism. So this was quite a long time ago. And the question was, could a single gene or maybe a small group of genes be responsible for all those phenotypic differences which differentiate the two social forms? Or would GP9, that was the name of the gene, be linked to other genes which would be important, and maybe those genes are linked on an inversion or a supergene? And so at that time, so that was about 15 years ago, or more than 15 years ago, two students, Yannick Wurm and John Wang, said, ah, we need to do a genome of the variant. That was still difficult to do a genome at that time, but they were very gifted people, so they did this genome, which we published. And from that, we were able to do a genetic map. And interestingly, there were 16 linkage groups, which is actually the number of chromosomes. And this is an interesting linkage group because here you have GP9. And we had several markers, and we did family studies. And this showed that there was a large region, about 12 megabases, in which there was no recombination. And interestingly, this is a region without recombination. This is a whole chromosome, and this is where GP9 is. And so there are many genes in that region. And so John Wang did also some fish analysis, and he showed that there was an inversion with a difference between the big B and the small B haplotype with between this region. So at least this region is part of an inversion, but we didn't have the information for the rest of the genome. And so basically what at this stage, what we knew is that those ants have 16 chromosomes, one which we call the social chromosome. If you have the two copies of the big B haplotype, you have the monogenic social form. If you have one copy of the small B haplotype, you have the smaller queens and the polygenic social form. And if you have two copies of the small B haplotype, then you are too small to survive, and you die. And of course, this is quite interesting because it's very similar to what we heard this morning. It's very similar to the sex chromosomes. If you have two copies of this one, you develop well. If you have one copy of that, you develop a little bit less well. And if you were unlucky to have two copies of this one, then it will be even worse. And so after that, Jan did some more sequencing, and we got a better genome, and we found that there are actually three inversions. This was part of the first one we discovered, but there are two other inversions, one very close to central B, the large one which is here, and this one makes a link between those two inversions. And interestingly, there are closely related species of Solenopsis invicta. And here, this one actually is a species, but it's not monophyletic, so it should be linked to Solenopsis invicta. And in all those species, you can have the two social forms. And so Jan analyzed those species, and he found that there was a single origin of the genetic basis for those two social forms. And it's the same social chromosome which is responsible of the presence of the two social forms in those five species. And in our analysis, we suggested that this social chromosome evolved somewhere here, which is near the origin of the five species when they started to speciate. But we didn't have much information. A little bit later, Quinn and Privman studied those two species, And they suggested that the social chromosome didn't evolve here, but it evolved later. And they suggested it evolved in Solenopsis richteri. And recently, Yannick Wurm and some of his students studied other species. They had one more socially polymorphic species, so they had several species, and they suggested that it evolved here in Solenopsis invicta. Actually, they mentioned Magdonagai, but it's I think there's an error in the coding of the species. What they studied is actually S at A X. So they suggested it evolved here. So in parallel, we were also studying the origin of this social chromosome. And this is work by Quentin Helle. And so to study that, we studied 185 males. And the idea was to do a phylogeny not of the whole supergene, but to look to each inversion separately, because we thought it could give more information. And so if there's a single ancestral origin of the supergene, and then it stayed in all species during after speciation, the phylogeny of the different inversion of the SB haplotype should recapitulate the species phylogeny. So we did that for each of the three inversions, and clearly this was not the case. So these are the three inversions. They have different phylogenies between themselves, and importantly, you can see this does not match the phylogeny of at the species level done on other autosomes. So this suggests there's not been probably a single origin of the supergene before speciation, but it's more likely that it evolved later on and introgressed species. So to study that, we really wanted to look what was the history of each of the three inversions, because that would give a better picture of than looking the whole supergene without taking into account the inversions. And so this is a history of each of the three inversions. The first inversion which evolved is this one, the one which is close to the centromere. And this one is actually, this is all the species, all the individuals, they form a monophyletic group, which is basal to Solenopsis richteri and these two species, or that species, Invicta ADRX. So it means that this first inversion occurs somewhere here. Then the second inversion was a large inversion. And this one, you can get several phylogenies. Sometimes it's close to two species, sometimes close to richteri or invicta. So it means it evolved somewhere here, and it's not possible to say exactly whether it was just before speciation or after speciation, but it evolved after the first inversion. And the third inversion is interesting because it linked the two other inversions. And this one evolved later on, and it evolved actually in Solenopsis richteri. And so basically the supergene was formed in three different steps, the first inversion here, the second here, and the third one here. And then we did several types of analysis, and we could show that so the supergene evolved in, was fully formed in Solenopsis richteri. You don't find any more relics of the partial supergenes, which were ancestral. You only find the one with the three inversions. Then it moved to Solenopsis invicta, and from there it moved to the three other species. And so we were also interested, so this suggests there's been hybridization, so we look for signs of hybridization in those different species. So they are native actually from South America. Now the find Solenopsis invicta, which is well known, is in the US, but it has been introduced there. But those ants are originated from South America. This one with a larger range is Solenopsis invicta. And so there is a lot of overlap between species which allows for hybridization. And previous work had shown that there is some hybridization between species. And so we conducted AB ABA test. And Kota showed that there is signs of hybridization between quite a few of those species. And if you summarize, you can find there is important phylogenetic heterogeneity across the nuclear genome among species. So part of the genomes can be more similar between different species, suggesting that there has been hybridization. And actually, for the mitochondrial DNA, it's quite messy. You can have either paraphyletic or polyphyletic mitochondrial genomes between species, so it's not a good marker of the species phylogeny, which is consistent with hybridization having occurred between species and also recent speciation. And using ABC analysis and summary statistics, so we could show there's been extensive gene flow between Psilocybin invicta and those three species, and also a little bit of gene flow among those species. And so these are data on Psilocybin invicta, but interestingly, there are data on four or other ant species which have shown recently that they're also super gene. One is in Formica salicis. This is work by Michel Chapuisat, who is here, and Alan Bradford also. And they also found that the variation queen number is linked to a supergene. And there are three more studies which are on the way to be published, showing that in three other species, there is also variation in social organization, which is based on supergenes. And these are ants which are very different from each other. So they are highly divergent. And so we reviewed a bit the differences between those species. And so it showed that in four species, we have good information about the size of the supergene, and the four cases are large supergenes. There is apparently no similarity between species and in what genes are really involved. It seems to be completely different in the species for which there is data. So there are five completely different origin of supergenes resulting those two types of social organization, but a different genetic basis. In all cases where it has been found, one haplotype has shown as a sign of deleterious elements, repetitive elements. In all cases, there is some evidence of spatial selection, because the two social forms tend to live in different types of habitat. So it is probably selection benefit of one social form in one type of habitat and benefit for the other social forms in another type of habitat. In two species where it has been studied, there is evidence of selfish genetic elements. So in Psilocybin invicta, it's a green bear gene, which induces workers to kill all the queens which do not carry one copy of that gene. And in Formica salicis, you have a maternal effect with a selfish gene leading to the death of some individuals. And there is evidence also of meiotic drive effect in both species. In the species, the two species where it has been studied, there's also non-random mating between the two social forms. They tend to live in similar habitats, so there is a lot of possibility of gene flow between the two social forms, but is non-random mating, and this is also something which can select for the maintenance of the social polymorphism, as shown by a paper to be soon published by Michel Chapuisat and his colleagues. And actually, in three of the five cases, there's evidence that the supergenes leading to two types of social organization has introgressed other species. So it underlies variation in social organization in several species. And actually, so if we summarize, supergenes are very common. So there are five cases in ants, and it's probably several hundreds of species, my guess, of ant species, which will be shown to have different social organization, which is due to the supergenes. And that's interesting because already quite a few years ago, we didn't know so many supergenes, but there was in the literature already quite a lot of evidence suggesting that they would be common. And as you know, there have been many cases which have been found in the last few years. And they seem to be particularly common in ants because, as I mentioned, there are probably hundreds of species which have variation in social organization. And this is due because probably these differences of behavior lead to ants to be able to select different type of habitats, having different social forms. So maybe social organisms are maybe particularly prone to have polymorphisms which are underlined by supergenes. And also, there are several cases. There are quite supergenes seem to be frequently able to move across species. There's really nice work on butterflies, which has shown that. And this is because probably those supergenes have a group of several genes which work well together, which lead to adaptations. And those ones are readily selected if they move by chance across species. For example, in the case of ferns, in some species, there's been only very little hybridization, but the supergene has moved across species. So probably even a little bit of hybridization, maybe even a few cases of hybridization, are sufficient to bring a supergene from one species to another one. And then because of strong positive selection, it can spread into species. And I think there will be many cases where we will find that such supergenes have moved across species, as now has already been shown in butterflies and in the ants. And interestingly, there are many cases. Once you have a polymorphism which is due to a supergene, they seem to be quite stable. For example, in the ants, there's been no loss of the supergene after it has moved across species. There's also evidence in some other species that they can stay long. And it's probably because of frequency-dependent selection. In one habitat, you have those two different haplotypes, which lead to two morphs or two social forms, which each have a benefit on one type of plants, or depending on behavior or mate choice. And there are several selective forces which frequently are implied, and I think there can probably also be many cases of meiotic drive, selfish genetic elements which can evolve, especially when you have no more recombination. This is a good ground to select for this type of selections. So to summarize, I'd like to thank the people who did the work and Ross, with whom I worked a lot since many years on ferns, Yannick Wurm and John Wang, which were the one who pushed to the fern genome, which led to the finding of the supergene, and Kurt Heiler, who did all the work I just mentioned. And by the way, Quentin just got a job in France, so I'm looking also for a postdoc. So I thank you for your attention. Thank you.